And our show today is we're going to talk about elders and transition and conscious elderhood. So on Post-Carbon Radio, we've had an interest in the transition town movement that is growing in the United States as lifeboats to help communities survive the coming challenges that we'll be facing, and by relocalizing and building resilient communities. And under the umbrella of Transition Sebastopol, a small community north of Point Reyes Station, our guests today on the phone, David Lucky Goff and Alexandra Hart, are founders of the Elder Salon, which was founded about 4 years ago. I'd like to welcome David Lucky Goff on the phone. Are you with us, David?
Yeah, but I can barely hear you, Bing, so
okay.
I'm hoping you can hear me.
Okay, I'll try to speak up and maybe move the levers up a little bit here. And on the other line, we have Alexandra Hart. Are you with us, Alexandra?
I am.
Okay.
Well, thank you for having us.
Welcome to Post-Carbon Radio. I'd like to give a little introduction for David. Has a PhD and has served as an adjunct faculty at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, where he's employed large group processes to promote community and personal development. In 2003, David had a brain aneurysm as a result of his stroke and the onset of a rare brain syndrome. He nearly died and ended up permanently disabled. This experience had a transformational effect on David, which made him lucky and cued him to how radically connected all things are. This broader awareness now informs his approach toward what it means to be human. And he is a co-facilitator of the Elder Salon in Sebastopol. And our other guest, Alexandra Hart, is... Alexandra was born in 1939 and has therefore had time to do many different kinds of things, though she identifies chiefly as a fiber artist, designer, and writer-editor. This work, she was editor of the Association for Humanistic Psychology for several years, designed books, and is still involved in many community-building activities as facilitator and participant. She is also a co-founder of the Elder Salon in Sebastopol. And in the studio, Susan Prince. Susan lives in Point Reyes. Susan is a life coach who has created and led several workshops designed for women in their later years. She's a longtime hospice volunteer specializing in grief support. In addition, she has enjoyed the unique opportunity of participating in the Indigenous model of community, where elders have a pivotal role sharing their experiences and insights and thus helping support a healthy and vibrant culture. Susan also has a background in environmental education with the emphasis on nature awareness and has worked with many young people outdoors, fostering their love and appreciation of the outdoors. More recently, she has been involved with the Center for Conscious Eldering, helping facilitate transformational retreats. So welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Bing.
And I think you know David Lucky Goff and Alexandra.
Yes, yes, we've met.
Uh-huh.
Can you both hear me?
I can hear you, thank you.
Oh, good. Lucky, can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can hear you better. Thank you.
I came up to one of your salons with my friend Terry Morowitz.
Yes.
Yes, and then saw you again at Wisdom 2.0 in San Francisco 6 weeks or so ago.
Great. Let's start off by asking Alexandra, how did you get started forming the Elder Salon in Sebastopol?
Well, I was engaged with the Transition Sebastopol movement from the beginning of the time that I heard that there was going to be a branch of transition in Sebastopol. Some friends of mine were in on the very beginning of it, and I attended the first public inquiry into public interest. There were many, many people there, and various things tagged up on the walls all around the room with different topics, and one of them was elders, which is one of the transition movement areas of interest. Although I have to say the transition in general tends to think of elders as someone you go to and ask for their story and write it down and maybe try to find out what they need, all done by younger people. And that was not the attitude I wanted to take toward that. I did, at the beginning, they felt that it would be best as part of the Heart and Soul group. So I started there with the Heart and Soul group, and then at some point I thought, no, I'm still not getting to what I would like to do. I had an idea that those of us who had been through the 60s and 70s, that growing group of elders, you know, that large baby boomer population, that we might have had an experience then that would inform our ability to change and to make transitions, and that I wanted to see who my peers were and find out directly what we were really about, what my generation had been about, and what we might have to offer the changing times. So that was my impulse to begin.
And Lucky, you came on board to support Alexander, I believe.
Yeah, I was very lucky that I was on the scene when she mentioned she was like Jesus. So I asked her at some point if I could be involved too. And happily she said yes.
And he's become more than important to the elder salon.
Yeah, I came to this in a very different direction from Alexandra. I, as you mentioned earlier, had a stroke in 2003, which was followed by the onset of a very rare brain syndrome. So rare, in fact, that it took many years for that to be diagnosed. And I lost functioning almost monthly for a period of 4 years, where I, during a large part of that time, I lived pretty much as a terminal patient. I had a planning horizon of about 24 hours. And all of that really impacted my consciousness. So much so that in the year 2007, I began to write down what I could, because I thought I was dying. I had two major regrets, and both of them were about community. So I started to write them down, hoping that writing somehow would allow me some relief from those regrets. And I ended up writing a book-length manuscript, which I had not started out to do. I started writing what I thought I knew and ended up continuing to write what I didn't know I knew. And when I came to the end of that writing project, I realized there were two populations of humans that I really had a desire to rub shoulders with, because I had a feeling that they might, by virtue of their life experiences, have a consciousness that was more evolved than most. And those populations were veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan who'd been injured, and elders. Again, both lines of interest were basically because I believed that during the time of their lives, they might have had circumstances which lead them to question what they'd been taught and to mine themselves more for the capabilities they need to go on living. So when I had the opportunity, by virtue of Zan's interest, to work with elders and to rub shoulders with them, I was really eager to do that because I wanted to find out what was possible.
Excellent. I want to bring Susan Prince into the conversation. You've worked with traditional elders in indigenous communities. Can you tell us something about, I know today elderhoods in this culture are not revered as much or considered for their expertise or knowledge.
Yeah. In indigenous cultures, people don't have to learn how to be elders. They just, they know from when they're little kids what it means. As the population ages, people go through rites of passage, and they are welcomed each time into the next stage. And by the time they get to be the elder, then it's clear that they have a huge wealth of knowledge, and they're respected, and they're an important part of the whole community. As you were talking, Lucky, I had this burning question, and I actually came to the show with it. And as you were speaking, it became clearer to me what I wanted to ask. Just putting it out there, and that's okay. So every vet doesn't become conscious, and every older person doesn't become an elder. So what is it that happens? So we have an event that happens, let's say, you know, like a stroke or an injury or a horrible experience like being in a war, and we all get older. And what is it that allows us to internalize that in a way that makes us change and transform and become conscious? To me, that's a really key question.
Do you want to tackle the questions then?
Well, I rather had hoped you would.
I think that's will, a really... but I'm interested in your perspective.
Okay. That's a really good question. It kind of goes right to the heart of a question that we've asked ourselves off and on over these last 4 or 5 years, which is, what is the difference between an older person and, an elder and a merely old person? And that difference seems to have to do with something internal, I'd say, something that is keeping that person who's growing older alive in their minds and their spirits and their desires to be of have a contribution to their community and to a continuing desire to grow and to develop. And the people among our group whom we are most likely to think of as elders are those who have made real progress in their developmental contributions or evolution, I should say, over their lifetime and in the group as we work together and explore just what little... It's kind of like our group is a little bit like the three blind men exploring the elephant, and one has one part, one has another part. Everybody puts them together, and the collective wisdom then becomes part of the elder consciousness.
You know, I wonder if... I hear what you're saying, and I wonder if really what it's all about is not so much learning but relearning. That naturally humans have this capacity to go through their lives with an awareness, and maybe there's something in our modern culture which cuts us off at the knees and does not allow that to happen. And we're trying to find a way to open up the channels again.
I have a...
That goes to my experience, Susan. And when I think about answering your former question about what is the difference between elders and older people, what distinguishes elders, I have two levels of answer to that question. One has to do with people who are willing to face their own lives and to face the difficulty of being human and work at what it means for them to be fully alive, to be fully human. I think people with that kind of attitude are more likely to be elders because they're more likely to be looking into their own life and more likely to be alive themselves with their interests and with their grief and with their desire to be fully human. And I think the point you just made about culture is actually quite important. We live in a culture that I would say is fairly ageist and encourages most people to not really age, to not really grow up, to not really become very aware of what it means to be human, especially in a fertile life. So I think the fact that we live in an ageist culture has a big part to play in how many people do not ever become anything more than just older.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Those people who actually work to defy ageism and to escape from the gravitational pull of our youth-oriented culture tend to become more and more alive, more and more able to articulate a larger perspective.
Thanks for saying that about the culture, too. I think that's what I was going to jump in with before, that I believe you have to be able to shuck off the conventions of the culture and in order to see more deeply into what's true and what's real. And by being able to do that, we can think for ourselves more clearly, and it's that ability to go to a new place, to put together all of that experience that's been garnered over the years into a new picture that may be of use to your community. And one other point on that score, the research has recently been done on people who get to be over 100, and one of the things they have in common is that capacity to behave non-conventionally or to think outside of the cultural box.
Well, I've been noticing since I've been focusing on elderhood. I turned 75, by the way, last October, and I've never thought of myself as an elder, but now, after reading what you've written in your handbook, Elders in Transition, I am going to embrace elderhood. Before, I was told that growing old ain't for sissies, but I see now I've got a lot to look forward to. I consider myself a baby elder, just learning. I wanted to ask Susan about the work she's doing on the Conscious Elder Project. I know you just attended a conference, and these conferences seem to be happening all over the country now.
Well, there's certainly a lot more going on than there was even 5 years ago. This is called the Conscious Elders Project, and it's the first time we've ever gotten together. And it came from a group of 10 or 11 people who met last year in Boston. Some of them from the Conscious Aging Networks, and decided that they wanted to create a movement and based on the idea that if not us, who? you know, that we have the capacity, the knowledge.
And the demographics now with the baby boomers coming up.
To actually create change, big change on the planet. And we have a responsibility to do that. And these, so 48 of us actually met at the Mercy Center the beginning of April, and it was a really, really interesting weekend. I don't quite know where to start to tell you about it. It was a beginning, and we're going to meet again. And right now we're you know, we came from all over the country, so we've got working groups set up, and we're having some really dynamic email exchanges. And you know, we're different. We've got people that are visionaries and people that are detail oriented and people of all kinds of backgrounds. So it's pretty exciting. And I have to say, one thing that really struck me was that we were all Caucasian. And this is leading me to another big question. We're all Caucasian. We were equally men and women, which was fantastic. Mostly, you know, from late 50s to early 80s. And we're all Caucasian. And, you know, I've been an activist for 30 years now, and I often come up with these questions about, you know, how do we spread the message and bring people in that, you know, that where it can cross economic barriers, it can cross racial barriers, because I think it needs to, and I'm throwing that out there. You know, how do we get other demographics to come on board? It's not just about age. Wondered if Lucky and Alexandra and Bing have thought about that.
I've thought about it. I worked with co-housing development for a number of years, and that was one of the areas that we specifically tried to encourage people other than white folks to be in communities. And it's a very difficult thing to convince people who have been excluded from the mainstream that joining another not quite so mainstream point of view is that appealing, or should be that appealing to them. I've been working with a cover for the book that will is on its way to somewhat. It will include some of the Elders in Transition handbook that you got, Bing, but it has about three times as much content. And I'm working on the cover on it, putting eyes. And I noticed that we're all white people again. There's one woman who's a good portion Native American, but she doesn't make that apparent. We have a little bit of Latin American blood mixed in, but primarily the identification is Caucasian. So I don't know how to... maybe this is work that this particular group of people needs to do. I'm not so sure.
You know, it could be. This is a gross generalization, but yes, maybe we're the ones who need it the most, because often in lower economic groups and in there is more of a sense of community. There is. More of a connection with the younger and the older.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe we're just the ones who need it the most right now.
We're going to have to take a little station break, and we'll be right back. So you're listening to KWMR, Community Radio for West Marin, Point Reyes Station, and Bolinas, 90.5 FM Point Reyes Station and 89.9 FM Bolinas, and streaming live at kwmr.org. And now back to Post-Carbon Radio. I'm here today with Susan Prince, and we're talking about conscious elderhood and elders in transition in Sebastopol.
So,
can I make one comment?
Yes.
Please.
The last thing you were talking about, diversity. I used to be a professor at a graduate school that tried to diversify by inviting in people of minority students. And those people, by and large, found that the culture was just as racist in an underground way as ever met in a more explicitly racist culture. By that I mean that we who are liberal have more of a tendency to be racist in a way that we're not very conscious of. And as a result, people of color and people who occupy a minority position often get the feeling that they're not that welcome. Their viewpoint is not so welcome. So I tend to be someone who actually thinks the magnetism is the real way to draw people in, not inviting people of different kinds of color or culture to be a part, but to actually develop within a capacity for embracing differences. So that emanates everywhere and thus prepares the way for people to come of their own accord. And I think one of the hallmarks of aging that I've noticed to the elder salon is the fact that we have a great deal more interest in differences than we used to. And by we, of course, I mean we older folks. And once upon a time, tolerating differences was seen as a great achievement. But I think older people are more intrigued than tolerant. And as a result, they want to know more about the reality that they might be exposed to if they interact well with someone who has a different viewpoint. The other thing I want to say is there is a huge, huge amount of differences between we white folks. So even if you look at a circle of 40 or 50 people, it's very different. And it can be more different, actually, within a single racial group than it could be between racial groups, if one is willing to inquire into the difference. So I think by virtue of having a community, that community will represent, just like happens in any couple relationship, there are differences that are very beguiling and cause a lot of trouble. And if they can be looked into in an open-hearted way, then amazing kinds of development can happen for everyone involved.
I really like what you said, Lucky. We did a super interesting process at the beginning of our workshop where we divided people up into four different categories based on the four directions. It's pretty fun. And it was an icebreaker, but it was also very, very informative because, as I mentioned before, some people are visionaries. Some people want to organize and are very detail-oriented. Some people just want to get the show on the road. Some people want to be deep and introspective. And once we see that those differences and we start working with them, then they become more opportunities to communicate instead of roadblocks.
Right.
And so
there's a lot more learning.
Yeah, and I mean that has nothing to do with race or with age. It's just sort of intrinsically how we're, you know, the way that we're put together. And so I like the idea that as we we become more aware of who we are and how we operate, and as we let go of our judgments and our fear around communicating, then we become interesting, exciting people, and that's really who we all are. And then that becomes there's that is catching. You know, people want to do that. They want to be there. They want to emulate that. And so if we can continue to do this, it will. Then other people can pick it up and they can do it their way. So it's sort of like what we're doing is we're creating a movement that anybody can join in their own way. Because we're modeling a new way of connecting with each other.
I think that's wonderful, the idea of encouraging people to be different and to appreciate one another for that and for the richness that it brings, rather than trying to make everybody change in order to be the same.
Yeah.
I think it's important to stimulate this you talked about, Susan, is mostly an elder capability, comes online later in life. So people don't necessarily have to be trained to do this. It's a natural outgrowth of growing up.
Nice. I think there's a real hunger for elders to get together. I've experienced that with a book group we just had. We were discussing a book by Lou Richmond, a Zen priest, called Aging as a Spiritual Practice. And we had about 20 participants come here to the church in Point Reyes Station. And about 15 of them came from outside the community. So I was really amazed. And the sharing that went on was so rich that at the end of the book group, we asked if people wanted to continue this discussion on aging, and all of them almost raised their hands.
Lucky and Alexander, I've only been to one of your salons, and it was very interesting. I think what happened that night was someone told a story, and we all talked about how it impacted us. In the Conscious Elders Project, there's a very, very strong desire to affect change to help the planet, and you know, partly through networking, through empowering people to be supported in whatever they're doing in a local level. And I wondered how much of your meetings and your conversations are around that.
Well, we bounce back and forth a bit around the difference between doing and being, and the emphasis seems to be more on being, and that our activities or our influence comes more from being being our essential selves, being authentic and embodying that who we are and how we are in the world. I think we're still learning first that we are elders, or learning how to be in process of becoming an elder. And we're still learning that what we will actually do with it really remains to be seen. Lucky, why don't you chime in on that, floundering?
I think the only thing I have to say is elders are different kinds of activists. The elder salon has primarily been a social space where older people could discover for themselves that they were free now to be themselves, and therefore have more to offer than almost anybody who isn't similarly free. I remember a time a couple of years ago in the salon where there were question surfaced, how can we give away our knowledge to the generations coming? What's the best way we could be actively involved making the changes that are necessary? And very quickly, the group arrived at the conclusion that teaching was not going to be the best way to do it. And eventually a voice emerged from the group which said, you know, the best thing we could do is just be ourselves, exemplify the changes we want to see in the world by being ourselves and being those changes. And to this moment, I still think that actually is the most potent thing elders can do to make the difference in the world. If elders actually mature into themselves, that offers a lot of hope for upcoming generations.
Yes, exemplifying was the word I was after. Thank you. There's one other thing that you said, Bing, about elders coming together in community or having a hunger to come together.
Yes.
What we found in the beginning was that most of the people who came in kind of looked suspiciously around. They said, well, these people are to themselves. These people are old, and I'm not old. And then, of course, they knew that they were equally old, and it took a little while before people were willing to say, oh, I am, and it's good. But it took some acknowledgement that being with peers had something really valuable. It didn't come at first.
Yeah.
Right. I want to move on to talking about your Elders in Transition, a handbook for growing elder community. I found it such a resource. I was very inspired by the wisdom in it that you both wrote. We are interested in possibly forming a conscious elder group here in West Marin, and I think it's a great guide. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you put it together? I know it's going to be an expanded version coming out soon, which you're going to call The Age of Actualization, a handbook for growing elder community. When would that be out?
Oh, in a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky, do you want to talk about that?
No, go ahead, Alexandra.
Okay. Yes, the larger book will be more of Lucky's writing that he's done so much work on what the elements of community are and what moves toward it and what is difficult. And so a lot of that will be included in the coming book. So if people have enjoyed or have run into the one that you have, which was just distributed through Transition US.
Can they go to that website and download it?
You know, I'm not sure whether just anyone can. Mm-hmm. I think our agreement was that people who were on the telephone would be doing it, but it's possible that it can be done. I haven't checked that.
Yeah, sure. Somehow I got a link to it, so if listeners would like a copy of it, you can email me at binggong@sonic.net.
And then if you find it valuable, you may be interested in this book that will be coming up. It'll be available through Amazon for sure, and probably in late May.
Great.
Yes.
I'd also like to let people know that you have a radio show, and it's called Growing an Elder Culture. And I've listened to a couple of the programs, and I've found it totally fascinating and another great resource for elders, that you cover subjects such what is elderhood and elderhood, being an elder versus being an oldster, and death and grief and loss and interviews with Tom Pinkston, I believe, who is a well-known working in the field on rites of passage, and another one by what's her name, Angela
Aaron.
Yeah, uh-huh. So they're great, and you can hear archive programs of that show at the website elderculture.org. Is that correct?
.com.
Yeah.
.com,
excuse me.
Elderculture.com.
Yeah.
Right, and we try to put up each radio show. We do one a month, and we put it up as soon as we can get it up later. In fact, if you wanted to give us a copy of this one, we could put it on there, too.
Great. And it's 2 hours long, by the way, too, so you really go in depth on subjects.
Yeah, we can be really more conversational that way.
I wish we had another hour because there's so much to talk about. But I'd like to spend the next 5 minutes, maybe each of you giving us some final words. Do you want to start, Alexandra?
Okay. Well, I guess my final word would be that it is so exciting to feel that I'm part of a growing movement that might be able to make a real difference simply by being who we are and connecting with other people of like minds. I wouldn't say like minds. That's kind of the wrong way to put it. But other people of my peers, you know, this age group, my generation, that... We have recently heard a new statistic that since 2010, the life expectancy is going down again for the first time. And what that's saying to me is there is at this time perhaps the most people of this particular age alive at the same time on the planet that there will ever be, perhaps, in any case, than there ever has been. And if it's true that we have a particular way of being able to put together our experience and perhaps make a sway opinion through both numbers and wisdom, that's one of the more exciting things I could possibly be part of. So I encourage others to meet together and see what they can make of it.
Thank you, Alexandra. David Lucky Goff?
The key word for me, Bing, is freedom. Think that I've learned over the last 4 years, the thing that really motivates people as they grow old and as they begin to face death is to fully become themselves. And to do so means to be as free as possible to discover for themselves what being themselves means. And I'm reminded of a time in the Elder Salon where we happened to have an introductory exercise where everybody was asked to say their age. And it turns out that the person who is the oldest person who is present, I think she was 86, discovered that she was the oldest person present and realized that she was an elder. At that point, up until that point, she aged without knowing she had anything of value to say about aging, but her life, a whole host of things. So I think by elders congregating together and talking to one another, they begin to awaken each other to what it really means to be human, to be alive, to have the opportunity to have an overview of the whole enchilada. you know, their own lives and the lives of the planet. So what I would say is there's a wonderful opportunity that older people can bring to other older people to help them gain or value the true perspective they already have.
Thank you, Lucky. And Susan, would you like to finish up with some final words?
Sure. I had this memory just a couple of minutes ago of when I was little, and I'd be falling asleep, and I could hear my parents downstairs just chatting and talking, and there was this wonderful feeling of comfort, just knowing that they were there and they everything was okay. And I was imagining what it would be like for the young people and the middle-aged people on the planet to know that the elders were there and had it covered. There's a way in which we can ground things, which is so unique to us. And I think, as both Lucky and Alexandra said earlier, if we can just be who we're meant to be, and in my humble opinion, that includes being active as well as being passive, actively involved and engaged in helping the planet. But if we can just be that and figure out our own pace and our our own energy level, and then lead from there, how marvelous that will be, and how much it can change the way things are going. So I'm very excited too. It feels really good to be involved in this, and I want for more and more elders to realize their capacity as much as they can.
I would like to also add saying by Seneca, a Roman lawmaker, I think, and philosopher, that really I resonate with. And it goes, as for old age, embrace and love it. It abounds with pleasure if you know how to use it. The gradually declining years are among the sweetest of life. So I'd like to end our program with that. And just thank you so much, Alexandra Hart and David Lucky Goff, for joining us. And I plan to visit you probably at the end of May at your Elder Salon. So I'll meet you in person.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Great talking to you both. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Goodbye, all.
Bye now.
Bye.
People have this opportunity.